You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in for Veronica Rickert. The 2016 presidential election is projected to cost $5 billion, more than double the price tag in 2012.
With so much money pouring into the election of our next president, our next guest questions if we can really continue to say the U.S. government is of, for, and by the people.
Critic Lewis Lapham actually questions whether that has ever been the nature of our government, saying that when the country has had to choose between moneyed interests and democracy, it usually chooses those moneyed interests.
Lewis Lapham is with us now. He's the editor of Lapham's Quarterly and editor emeritus of Harper's Magazine. His article in the November issue of Harper's is called Bombast Bursting in Air, the story so far of the 2016 election. Lewis, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. I'm glad to be in Central Time.
Well, you start your piece with a quote from Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. We must make our choice, quoting here, we may have democracy or we may have wealth concentrated in the hands of a few. We can't have both. You say we've decided, and it's we've decided more or less on the wealth concentrated in the hands of a few. Talk that out for us.
Well, I mean, that's I think that Brandeis was right in saying that. On the other hand, when the country, the foundation of the country with the Constitution in 1787 in Philadelphia, what those people have, they're all landowners. They're either rich merchants from New England or they're plantation owners from the South, but they are landed gentry. And their notion is an enlightened oligarchy, which is they call a republic, which is what Franklin says that they're trying to do, and it's the same kind of they're taking their ideas not only from the French Enlightenment and the late 18th century England, but also from Aristotle. And Aristotle makes the point that all government, no matter what you call it, whether you call it democracy, whether you call it plutocracy, whether you call it oligarchy, is essentially in the hands of relatively few people. And Madison says that. He says what we're trying to do is set up a government to be directed by men with the wisdom to discern and the virtue to pursue the common good of the society. Thomas Paine, who had written Common Sense and wrote the Crisis Papers during the Revolutionary War, has a different idea of democracy. His is a really popular democracy of the people, by the people, and he says that the strength of government is the strength of the people to mutually support one another. That's that strength of the government and the happiness of the governed. But that is really not what we start out with. In the early 19th century, it goes into a kind of democracy that's essentially all about money. And Jefferson and Adams, although they were at odds with each other in the election of 1800, as they get older, they're Jefferson's in Monticello and Adams is in Braintree, Massachusetts, and they start writing each other letters. And this is the subject that is in their correspondence. And Jefferson says at one point, money, not morality, is the principle of commercial nations. And they both sort of see that the Republican idea has gone the way, you know, gone where the woodbine twine is. And then they both die. They both die in 1826 on the same day, July 4th. Jackson comes in with a spoils system where everything is for sale. And then the men who wrote the Constitution, I mean, did not, that kind of an oligarchy didn't continue to exist, because if it's going to be an enlightened oligarchy, the people have to pay attention and they have to put more emphasis on their store of virtue than on their hoards of wealth. And that doesn't happen. So they can't, they don't have enough wisdom or virtue to rid the Republic of slavery. That happens in the Civil War. And then Lincoln, in the Gettysburg Address in 1863, gives the country its noble myth. Government of the people, by the people, for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Talking to Lewis Lapham about American government and elections, he says not government of the people, by the people, and for the people, but in the hands of the wealthy people, in effect. And Lewis, I want to take us into the 2016 election now. Since the period you've talked about, the franchise expanded, more people with the vote, but you say the moneyed people are still calling the shots. Our elections are an elaborate form of political theater now.
Yes, they are, and they have been for some time. I mean, elections are always political theater, but I mean, what the elections are, the less democracy we have, in fact, on the ground, in office, the more of it we have to have in virtual reality. In other words, the election it lasts for almost 4 years, and what it is telling us the story that, yes, Virginia, we still have a government of the people, by the people, for the people, and here are a cast of characters with supposedly different opinions, making a show of themselves, and we have sound bites, and we have people. You know, we have Iowa caucuses, and we have New Hampshire caucuses, and we have a lot of constant commentary in the news media, drumming up the excitement of a Democratic race for the White House roses. And what it really is a show. It's an entertainment. It's a let's pretend democracy. It's the show of democracy. It's not the thing itself. And one of the problems, of course, is that, I mean, the candidates are made by and for the camera. And the camera doesn't do democracy very well. I mean, the democracy is about words. It's about thought. It's about listening to people other than oneself. And it's about candor. It's about telling the truth or trying to tell the truth to each other. Probably one of the finest books on American democracy ever that I know is James Fenimore Cooper, published in 1837, called The American Democrat. And he says that the first principle of democracy is candor. Unless we try to tell each other what we know, what we have seen and experienced on our common journey, it's all a sham. And as you know, and as practically everybody else in the country also knows, is that what the candidates are saying is seldom the truth. They're not trying to tell the truth. They're trying to pitch. It's a sales pitch to a target audience. You say one thing to blacks. You say another thing to gays. You say another thing to unions, and so on. I mean, and so nobody is talking to their fellow Americans. They're talking to a demographic. They're pitching themselves the same way the advertising a product is pitched to a particular zip code or prejudice or prior arrest record.
We're hearing from Lewis Lapham, editor of Lapham's Quarterly, editor emeritus of Harper's Magazine. His latest piece in Harper's is called Bombast Bursting in Air, looking at the 2016 presidential election.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think Lewis Lapham is right? What do you make of the news that this presidential election will cost $5 billion? Where do you think we should do about it? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation with Lewis Lapham, editor of Lapham's Quarterly and editor emeritus of Harper's Magazine. His article in the November issue of Harper's is called Bombast Bursting in Air.
In his piece, he makes the case that our presidential elections are more theater than substantive choice, that our government is more in the hands of the wealthy, more of a plutocracy or oligarchy than democracy. Do you agree, or do you think we really do have meaningful choices to make amongst our presidential candidates? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Lewis, if it is this way, if people don't like it, is there a realistic alternative? What would have to happen to make our representative government representative?
Well, I mean, there are a number of things. What one could do immediately would be, in 2016, would be to vote for Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is actually, he's an avowed socialist, but he's running on, I mean, his campaign is democracy. I mean, he is along the lines of Fenimore Cooper. He's also along the lines of Tom Paine. He's along the lines of the progressive side of Teddy Roosevelt, and also the Franklin Roosevelt New Deal. And the so that would be one thing that you could do. Another thing we should do is to revise the Constitution so that we're not voting for an electoral college. In other words, I'm in New York, and New York, no matter who votes, when anybody does, New York will go Democratic because of the way the electoral college is set up and the way the vote is counted. So I'm not voting. My vote for the president won't count. And it wouldn't count if I was a Republican either. I mean, it only counts in relatively few states, the so-called swing states. But California will be Democratic, Texas will be Republican, and so on. So it's not a one vote, one person setup. So we might want to revise the Constitution. The people who wrote the Constitution expected it to be revised from time to time. They knew that you couldn't set something in stone in the 18th century that it would be pertinent or relevant necessarily to a situation in the 21st century, but they left that open. And we've amended the Constitution a number of times. We should probably amend it again, and we might even want to change we might want to have a parliamentary system of government in the way they have it in England, rather than the way we have it set up now, because the circumstances are different.
Ed Lewis, I want to bring in a caller now. We've got Bob on the line in Green Bay. Bob, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to mention that, you know, it seems like right now we have the lesser of two evils, and I would really love to see, like, you know, half a dozen different parties with real opinions rather than just pandering to, you know, the biggest mass that they can. I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are on that.
No, I'd like to see the same thing. But to get there, you would have to amend or revise the Constitution.
Bob, thanks a lot for that call. So that said, Lewis, short of changing our electoral system to have more than two parties, is there a way to have more diversity of viewpoint other than two people, in effect, to choose from come election day?
No, not if you don't change the system we've got now. That's the way it will come down. And the various candidates. I mean, we go through the primary system, where people are not judged really on their ideas. They're just judged on their, you know, for the camera personality. It's television reality show. That's why Trump understands this, and. With a television camera, you only get a few seconds. It's hard to make a complicated argument in whatever 45 seconds or 2 minutes. I mean, the Lincoln Douglas debates went on for 3 hours. People standing around in the sun. In 1800, the population was 3 million people. In the new United States, and only a few, the majority didn't have the vote. There was no direct election of senators. There had to be a property qualification. Slaves couldn't vote. Women couldn't vote. And also, most of the people that were voting were literate. And we now have large numbers of people in this country that are, according to the Department of Public Education, functionally illiterate. And democracy is a very hard form of government to do it. It's extremely difficult because you've got to listen to a lot of different people. You've got to have people who think for themselves, who have the courage to say what they think. And that's not easy, and so yes, we could change it. I mean, but you'd have to work on it. I mean, Sanders actually says this. I mean, when he's talking in his campaign, he says what needs to happen is a lot of people have to want to make the change. It takes a revolution a revolution in which a lot of people are involved, not just specific interest groups. I mean, the way our politics is now broken up into talking to very targeted, old Americans, young Americans, black Americans, and so forth and so on. And that's not citizenship. You're talking to consumers or customers rather than you're talking to citizens, and it's not participatory.
Bob, thanks for that call as we talk to Lewis Lapham. Lewis, as we wrap up, in the piece we're talking about, you point the finger in part at the media, saying they wouldn't take somebody like, say, Bernie Sanders seriously, somebody who tries to step outside the system of big money. What would you like to see from the media in its political coverage?
Well, I think I'd like to see less of it. But of course, the media has got a real interest in this, in staging the theater. I mean, of that $5 billion is going to be spent, a great deal of it is going to be spent for advertising in the media or for supporting various newsletters and newspapers and magazines with political theater. I mean, it's kind of a reality show, and I think I think you have to go about the television debates in a different way. Give people more time. Have fewer people. I think you should limit the campaigning system to maybe in England it's 3 months. I mean, maybe we could do six, but just cut down on the nonsense and stop, playing it for celebrity, which is the way the media plays it. But that's the media's lifeblood, so it would be hard to get the media to give it up.
All right, we'll leave it there. Lewis Lapham, thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
We've been talking to Lewis Lapham. He is editor of Lapham's Quarterly and editor emeritus of Harper's Magazine. We've been talking about his piece in Harper's. It's called Bombast Bursting in Air, the story so far of the 2016 election. And you can check that out and continue the conversation, by the way. Share your thoughts on it. Head over to the Central Time Facebook page for a look at that.